Hello and welcome to Classical Guitar Alive. I'm Tony Morris. Classical Guitar Alive is broadcast worldwide thanks to the generous support of the Kadosky Foundation and Charles and Taco Parker, the Link Foundation, and Mike and Patty Morgan. And thanks to a gift in loving memory of Adam Bratcher. Thanks for joining me for this week's edition of Classical Guitar Alive, featuring music by American composers. And later in the program, we'll hear an interview with Giovanni De Chiaro, who talks about music of Scott Joplin, and a piece of music that Joplin wrote for a publicity stunt that turned into disaster. We'll begin with music of John Philip Sousa. This is his Black Horse Troop March, performed by the LA Guitar Quartet. We've just heard the LA Guitar Quartet performing John Philip Sousa's Black Horse Troop March. We'll hear another guitar ensemble performing American music. The Versailles Guitar Quartet performs three ragtime piano pieces, beginning with Kitten on the Keys by Zez Confrey, followed by Mississippi Rag by William H. Krell, and ending with Ragtime Dance by Scott Joplin. Thank you. three ragtime pieces performed by the Versailles Guitar Quartet, beginning with Kitten on the Keys, followed by Mississippi Rag, and ending with Scott Joplin's Ragtime Dance. Giovanni De Chiaro has also arranged Scott Joplin's piano rags for guitar, and he spoke about this great early 20th century African-American composer.
In 1900 is when he really made it big, so to speak, and it was such a fluke. He was playing in a club called the Maple Leaf Club in St. Louis, and he had tried and tried to get his rags published with a publisher that was in St. Louis. The man's name was John Stark. But he kept getting rejected time after time again, you know. But God love him, he kept on trying. One night at the bar closed down, and he just went in the back room, and he had a little old upright in there, and he was just goofing around on the keyboards. And John Stark was in the bar that night, and when he heard what was coming out of the back room, he was so amazed. So he didn't know who that guy was, okay? He just thought, what is that? So he went in the back and kind of peeked in and saw it was Joplin. Of course, he didn't know who Joplin was, but Joplin knew who he was because he'd been rejected by him so many times. So Stark said to him, what's that piece you're playing? And Joplin just was goofing around on the piano. I mean, he didn't, you know, he was just like us, just playing some chords, you know? And he was, oh, it's my new rag. You know, he was making it up. He goes, well, let's hear it. And so Joplin said yes. So he knew that this was his big chance to be heard. So on the spot, he just sat down and wrote the Maple Leaf Rag. I mean, he just made it up as he went along. So Stark was so taken by this piece. He said, look, you've got to come tomorrow. And look, let's sign a contract. I'll print that for you and we'll publish it. So Joplin was delighted. So just before Stark left, he goes, by the way, what do you call that piece? And of course, you know, he didn't have any name for it yet, so off the top of his head, he said, the Maple Leaf Rag, because he was playing in the Maple Leaf Club. And about 6 months after it was published and released, it went on to sell a million copies. And that was without the benefit of radio, CDs, wow, LPs, even piano player rolls, nothing. I mean, it was just a hit. And that established Joplin as the king of ragtime. And he basically had that reputation until he died.
De Chiaro performing The Maple Leaf Rag by Scott Joplin. And before that, we heard an interview with Giovanni De Chiaro. You're listening to Classical Guitar Alive. I'm your host, Tony Morris. We're featuring music by American composers this week. We'll hear more from that interview with Giovanni De Chiaro, who has recorded music of Scott Joplin.
The story about the titles of pieces is interesting. Once he had finished writing a piece, and he was with a friend of his at the publisher's house, and they were trying to come up with a name for it. And then this goes to show you how they pick names for their pieces. So they were over there scratching their heads, and they noticed this little kid running down the street with a big overcoat. And as the kid was running down the street, candy was falling out of his pockets. And about a second or two later comes the store owner chasing after this kid. And they go, oh, look, that kid must have just swiped some candy. And they go, swipe, swipesy. And so they named one of the rags the Swipesy Cakewalk. Because they were, I guess, encouraged or inspired by this little kid that was running down the street being chased after by this shop owner. So sometimes the titles really don't have anything to do with the piece. But there is one piece, Tony, that has a very interesting story. It's called the Crush Collision March. Now, there was a railroad called the Katy. It was the Missouri, Kansas, and Texas Railroad. And around 1897 or 98, they were interested in doing like a sales promotion to get people to ride on the train. So a man named George Crush, he was a ticket salesman, and he came up with this idea that why don't we go into the prairie a little outside of Waco, Texas, and give everybody a picnic, give them sandwiches, you know, and have them sit right near the railroad tracks. And then the idea was that they would have one train, okay, going from east to west, okay, 7 boxcars, all empty, and have it go 60 miles an hour, and then on the same track have another train go in the opposite direction at 60 miles an hour with 7 empty boxcars, and have them crash as a publicity stunt. But that's what they did. And so they wanted Joplin to write a piece that would depict this plane crash. Well, let me tell you about what actually happened. So they did this very stunt. So they had like 30,000 people, and they were all sprawn out on the prairie just right there eating. Oh, it was great. I mean, it was a great day. So here come the two trains. Ooh, each train's going right down the track. And then they collided at 60 miles an hour each, right? But what they didn't expect was one of the boilers on the locomotive exploded. They didn't know that was going to happen. And when it did, it sent these razor-sharp, red-hot pieces of metal flying into the crowd. It killed like 2 people, injured dozens. It was a disaster. Needless to say, the George Crumb lost his job.
George Crush.
Crush. Yeah, not Crumb. George Crush. Yeah, not sorry. George Crush lost his job. But then he was rehired. Sorry about that. But so Joplin, though, when he wrote the piece, if you look in the music, it says, he has little written indications. He'll say, like, the sound of trains going down the track at 60 miles an hour. And then he plays that. Then it says sounds of the whistle, and then you actually hear the whistle. Then it says sound of the collision, and there's this an F and a C chord played together. It sounds pretty bad. And then what makes me think that Joplin wrote the piece before it happened is because after this program music of this accident, then you return to the very soft, lush music that depicted the picnic at the first place. So he actually wrote the piece, I think, before the event happened, and it was used as music for the publicity stunt.